You've entered Book Storm with Kristen Civiletto and me, Chris Storm. This is a podcast devoted to best-selling books that matter, books that make a difference. We're diving down deep with beloved authors about their stories. We're exposing hot-button topics and heartfelt themes, the issues that affect each of us in our own lives, as siblings, parents, partners, friends, as human beings. We're braving new ideas, fresh thoughts, hard lessons, and important truths. Those kinds of things that stay with us long after we turn the last page and close the book. Listeners, we are so excited to have with us today the very gifted author, Paula McLean. You'll know her as the author of many New York Times best-selling novels, The Paris Wife, Circling the Sun, Love in Ruin. We're here to talk to her today about her latest bestseller that Kristen and I adore, When the Stars Go Dark. But before I do, I'm going to give you a little mini bio of Paula because I absolutely loved it. On her website, where you're going to want to visit, she lists her bio, and it's a little more unusual than other people because she's very honest, very authentic, and even a little vulnerable, and we thank you for that. And I want to press if this also to say, Kristen and I believe that's what makes Paula such a gifted writer, because she is exposing her true self. She has understanding, empathy, and she shows emotion. You're very welcome.
Thank you.
As she states, and I'm just going to read from it, Paula was born in Fresno, California. After being abandoned by both parents, she and her two sisters became wards of the court system. They were moved in and out of various foster homes for 14 years. When she aged out of the system, she supported herself as a nurse's aide, a pizza delivery girl, an auto plant worker, a cocktail waitress, before discovering that she had a unique talent and gift for writing. She received an MFA in poetry from the University of Michigan. Her essays have appeared in prestigious periodicals like Town and Country, Good Housekeeping, Real Simple, the Oprah Magazine, the New York Times, and elsewhere. She lives with her family in Cleveland. Her books have sat on the New York Times bestseller list for more than dozens of weeks. And she's also the recipient of the very prestigious Cleveland Art Prize for Literature. So, Paula, thank you for joining us today.
Absolutely. It's such a pleasure. Thanks for having me. And thanks for being so appreciative and generous. It's nice.
And thank you for being so honest and sharing your personal story with your readers. We spoke a little before we started, but we all, I think, endure and overcome obstacles through life.
Yeah.
And when someone such as yourself, who we admire so much, is so open, it gives the rest of us hope and strength to overcome things.
Thank you. When I give public speaking events and someone introducing me reads that bio, invariably there are a few small gasps in the audience because it's not our perception. Someone who's a New York Times bestselling author doesn't usually come out of foster care. I can't even imagine what the percentage might be, like what the odds are that I've bucked. It's got to be infinitesimal. So yeah, so I'm proud of that, actually. But I'm open on my bio because I guess I want to show like that's who I am. That's where I come from, as well as being who I am now. And I think that we should, I don't know, be more willing to. Joan Didion has this great quote about staying on nodding terms with your former selves, right? Mm-hmm. So instead of like pushing back all the versions of yourself that you wish, you know, you hadn't been, to make friends with those people and carry them along on the journey.
Oh, I love that. It. Yes, that's amazing. Yeah. Well, Paula, we like to give our listeners just a brief introduction to the book, which I'm going to do without giving away any spoilers.
Thank you.
And at the end, you are free to add any additional facts about the book that you want to put on the table. But at the start of the novel, Anna Hart is a seasoned missing persons detective who is on leave because she has experienced a personal tragedy. She travels back to a village in California where she grew up, and it was a place where her foster parents offered her some stability. So this is a natural place, it sounds like, for her to gravitate to. When she arrives, she immediately learns that a young girl has disappeared, and this crime is very reminiscent of, during a crucial period in her own life, a friend of hers that also disappeared when she was growing up. And as she starts perhaps working on this case, and I don't want to give away too much, really the past and the present begin to collide for her. And she experiences some of the worst of humanity, but also some of the very best of humanity. Did you want to put any other facts about the book on there? And again, I don't want to give away spoilers.
I think you did a beautiful job kind of setting it up. You know, it's definitely a book that invites psychological kind of insight. And, you know, I wanted to write a book where my main characters didn't just do things like search for missing persons, right? But understand something profound about themselves along the way. And so I make my victim someone who speaks to elements of my detective's life that open her up and make her see what kind of change is still possible so that she can heal from her own wounds and then also help others heal. So
absolutely. Yeah. And I will tell you, I know we have some questions for you, but I have to say, this book leveled me. It really did.
Aww,
it was, it's devastating in its import, but also in its beauty. And as a person who is very close with environmental issues, with the natural world, even on that level, this book just was incredible.
Oh,
so so if we're ready to brave the storm,
Okay.
We sure are.
Let's do it.
So I agree with Kristen, for all of our listeners, we highly recommend this book. It not only was it entertaining and interesting because there's a mystery here, but it was important and really inspiring, and something very relatable, I think, to all people. So what I'm going to start with is I thought that this book was even so much more than all of that. It was a call for attention to missing and exploited children. As you wove this story, you showed us that the necessity of understanding and empathizing. So the heroine for our reader is an abused and neglected child who later enters into a foster family. She becomes a detective, and then she begins searching for a missing girl, Cameron, who was also traumatized and mistreated and then adopted into a foster family. So there's a very relatable relationship between these two who have never met.
But
Anna says, and I love this quote, "No matter how resilient children can be, or how wanted, loved, and nurtured they are by their new family, their original wounds of abandonment and rejection are not magically healed." And I wondered if you could expand on that. What were you trying to show the reader through this story? And I really felt so much heartache, but also forgiveness and even the beginning of healing.
Yeah. And hope, I would want to, you know, to add too, or I'm really hoping that was part of the takeaway for you in the book, because it does tell kind of a big kind of story and goes to some deep places. Not everybody as a reader kind of wants to go there. And yet I also feel that as readers, if we can be taken through a kind of storm and then out again to the other side, it can feel really cathartic, right? We can feel like we really went on an emotional journey with a character as well as being entertained. And that's the kind of book that I want to read. And so that's the kind of book that I wanted to write. But so when I was researching this book, you know, the idea came to me kind of out of nowhere. I'd been writing historical novels for a while. And suddenly this detective appeared in my imagination. And even then I'm like, okay, a missing persons detective. What do I know about writing suspense? I knew right away that I kind of wanted to push the parameters of the genre. So a lot of thrillers and suspense novels, not to knock them, and even crime TV has a kind of obsessive curiosity with the criminal mind, right? That's why we watch. We're fascinated with what makes those killers, for instance, do the heinous things that they do. And as I was researching, various, I'm just going to say it, serial killers, you know, for this book, it really struck me that the victims almost always are thumbnails in books about violent crime and even in TV sort of docudramas. And I just kept thinking, okay, why is that? You know, why can't I create a character, for instance, that's going to shine the intensity of her light, right? Because of what she's experienced on the disenfranchised, on those who don't have voices, and to kind of illuminate their stories because she suffered similar pain. Right. So it's her pain that leads her to her purpose, to her life's work. And it's both a burden and it's a great gift as well, because she does have insight. As you said earlier, you know, even before she meets Cameron Curtis, the victim, she understands something really profound about her that's going to help her in her search.
And we both agree that some of the very best stories do show that character growth, and a character coming from a weak or wounded place that is living their normal life and just trying to live a healthy life and survive and find happiness after enduring hardship. And the reader walks along with them and is rooting for them the whole while, not just that she finds the killer, but that she overcomes, without giving too many spoilers. And so I felt that your book did give a lot of hope that, I just want to go back to this wounded child notion that wounded children can heal enough to live a healthy life. Right. And putting this into the real world, what can we do? I kept thinking, what could I be doing too, if I know some of these children in my life or even adult friends who I know have endured, what could we do to help? Maybe just be a listener or supporter?
Absolutely. Well, for me, I mean, because I've written a story, as you might imagine, you read my bio, I grew up in foster care. I've created a character who grew up in foster care. I'm interested in pursuing how the ripple effects of trauma kind of can move through a life. And then whether or not we can actually heal those wounds or even use them to create change and healing in others. And to me, that's like the paramount of what we can do with our adversities in life. So I had a Dickensian childhood. I mean, you couldn't make it up, right? It's a made for TV movie. And yet I at a certain point got really curious about my own psychology, like how the effects of the past still lived inside my body. I started doing a lot of reading about the impacts of trauma, and particularly got fascinated with how trauma actually, there's a great book, it's been on the New York Times bestseller list in nonfiction for years now, by Bessel van der Kolk, called When the Body Keeps the Score. And I don't know if you've heard of that, but there are books like that that talk about how trauma lands in the body, and whether or not we are aware of its impact on us, it can create all kinds of behavior and even subconscious, what do I want to say? Well, there's more in the book about that. I mean, kind of creates a drama, creates a narrative, opens us up to the possibility of greater violence, for instance, right? And all of this is done at a level that maybe we're not exactly aware of. So for me, your question is like, what can I do? Well, what did I do? I became aware of how these things can impact my life. And the more I was kind of mindful about, I don't know, my own growth and healing, I mean, in a lot of therapy, obviously, then the more I became certain that people can overcome almost anything.
We right? love that.
Like we are incredibly resilient, but how can we grow unless we first know what's happening, right? And really sort of turn those questions back on ourselves. Like if we're drawn toward abusive relationships, for instance, right? Instead of living in a trance about why that's happening. You know, you have girlfriends, I'm sure, like, oh, I'm drawn to the bad boys, right? Why do I always end up dating unavailable men, right? And then they have a margarita and then they go and find somebody else. I mean, that's a joke, right? What I'm saying is, if we really start asking those questions like, huh, why do I do that, right? What's driving that behavior? What in my own story, my childhood story, my origin story, could be kind of pushing at me in such a way that I would be repeating some sort of drama, whether or not I'm aware of it? So I believe we can all heal. I think we're here to heal and that we're here to grow, and that a lot of it starts with those hard questions that once they are alive in our lives, they have no right to go away until we can find the answers to them.
Mm-hmm. And I love what you said, that you have to go ahead and look at it. Don't ignore it. Don't push it under the rug. Look right at it. Go to the therapy. Learn to deal with it. And I want to just say this one more quote that falls exactly in line with what you just said. It was from Carola in the book.
Her therapist.
The therapist who told Anna, it's not what happens to us that matters most, but how we learn to carry it. I'm starting to understand the difference and how maybe the only way we can survive what's here in what we are is together. And I just loved that. I thought that was a little bit of therapy wisdom for all of us.
There is some therapy wisdom in there for all of us. Yeah, I managed to get some therapy in there as part of my research. And I realized, because this was the first time in 10 years that I'd actually created an imaginary character, I'd been writing about women who actually lived in history. And suddenly I have this character and anything can happen to her. And I realized that she could be a kind of avatar for me, and that all the things that I'm fascinated in, Anna could also be fascinated in, like trauma and healing. And that everything kind of went into the book, my own therapy, trauma, therapists and healers that I'd seen over the years, kind of are quoted verbatim in the book. There's a moment when Anna is talking to her partner, Will, who is also one of my favorite characters in the book. And she's talking about this idea that we were just onto a bit ago, which is sometimes trauma can act through us unconsciously if we're not aware of it. And that Anna refers to this as a bat signal, right? And so the story is that we're all, as Anna says to Will in the book, like we're all born in the world with a bright, pure light, right? We're all born bright and clean and pure. But then when trauma comes in for about all of us, really, it creates a kind of tar over that soul. And then when the light shines through it, it creates this bad signal, which is a scene in the book. And the scene in the book comes right from a conversation that I had with a trauma therapist that I interviewed once, who had worked with literally hundreds of thousands of trauma victims. He was there at 9/11. He was there at the Oklahoma City bombings. Wow. And essentially he is a healer, and he starts with opening people to their own stories. It's fascinating. But he said that, honestly, ladies, about the bat signal, he said that to me about me.
Wow.
He said that to me about me, about part of my story that I was letting him know about my childhood and about how my childhood was rippling through all my relationships, but particularly my romantic relationships, right?
It's funny because that's Kristen's next question. And that was going to be, we both picked the same bat signal question. Yeah, we fought over it. I said, you can have. Hers was a little better.
And
than
now
mine,
I
anyway,
stole so. Your thunder.
No, not at all.
She's got more.
No, there was actually another part to that pivotal scene that I thought was absolutely important. This really resonated with me. And you had written, and this is what Anna is talking about, that when hard things happen in your family or by an acquaintance, children don't have the coping skills. So silence follows, complicity and shame. And eventually every psychopath, sociopath, sadist, alcoholic, narcissist comes running. Mm-hmm. Wow. And that was the bat signal that, you know, that you were just talking about. But that just made it so clear.
Right.
Something that we kind of hit in and around that, but we don't necessarily see it laid out that clearly. And when you laid it out that way, I was just floored.
Well, and because it's unconscious, that's what makes it dangerous. I mean, ladies, you were asking me before, like, what can we do, right?
Yes.
Like, we might not know that we're emitting this bat signal essentially as an invitation to others that they can treat us badly. But once we do know, isn't the responsibility on us? I mean, it's certainly not our fault, right? Whatever happens to us, particularly as children, is not our fault. And it's not our fault that we draw these people to us, because all of that is unconscious. But awareness creates a kind of responsibility to me. And at a certain point, the buck stops, right? I mean, I'm still doing work on the fact that my mother abandoned me when I was 4, right? Now, my father abandoned me too, but more and more I'm understanding that it's the maternal wound that is so archetypal and primitive and profound. I mean, and I say it in the book, in every culture since the beginning of human time, you know, the story is the same. Mothers are supposed to stay.
Absolutely.
And when they don't, right, these wounds are created. So it's baked into the book because it's baked into my psyche, right?
Absolutely. And, you know, when you are in a relationship, and I've had this experience twice with somebody who had a mother who abandoned them, those are very difficult wounds to overcome because there's that inherent distrust maybe of women, or there's that acting so badly to see if they can drive you away like their mother abandoned them. You know, and again, I'm not a psychologist, I'm an attorney, but I see these very, very deep-seated mother wounds. And it just made me wonder, how do we equip young people to process these wounds? Is this something we teach in school? Because sometimes the family structure is what is inflicting the wounds, or even the faith element that might,
exactly,
the wounds may come
and
from
family
there.
Structures, first of all, thank you for sharing part of your story. I think we need to do that more. And open
absolutely.
Up, right? Like the more we come through the surface, the facade, like we work so hard, right, to appear as if we're not struggling. But then the moment we do, suddenly everybody's like, oh, phew, now I can trust you. Like I don't make friends with women who seem too together to me.
Right.
Like I need to see the zipper come down, right, in the back, or right, they trip coming in the room or something, because that's human. We like to see the humanity in each other, honestly.
Absolutely.
Because that's the real business. But it's so interesting that you say that about how do we learn this stuff? You know, most of us don't learn it young when we could really use it, because our families of origin, you're right, are usually the systems that are inflicting the trauma, and we can't ever feel, most of us can't, that we can excise ourselves from those families without doing even more damage, both to them and to us, right? Because that's not in the rule book. We have to somehow twist ourselves to survive within those systems. And sometimes it feels like a really unsurvivable place and an unsurvivable situation. I was listening to a podcast where a meditation expert and Zen figure, Stephen Batchelor, was saying, you know, when he was a kid, it occurred to him that all this time is spent on these subjects, right, to prepare us for the world, like math and history and chemistry and English, when really what he wondered was why no one teaches us about the really important stuff that's happening inside of us. Because Absolutely. That's the key, right? To have mindfulness, to have self-compassion, to understand that the wounds that you carry inside you aren't because of you, aren't because of anything you've done or anything that you are. And yet we believe that as children, don't we? And we carry these burdens, which goes back to that line, right? It's not what happens to us, it's how we carry it. Because humans are unbelievably resilient. We can survive almost anything. It's what we do with it, right? It's how we carry it.
No, absolutely.
I love that Kristen said that. What about a class in school? Oh, I mean, I can totally agree with that. And that's just when the child is evolving and growing. Mm-hmm. And it's not in school just parents. It could be neighbors that are emotionally abusing them or abusing them, in other words, or Absolutely. It's even other kids at school.
Oh, bullying, like anything. Yeah. I mean, a traumatic event, right, can be almost anything. This book that I mentioned earlier, Bessel van der Kolk, The Body Keeps the Score, it's just one fascinating little tidbit about how humans are the only ones, the only species that holds on to these traumas and don't release them. And he talks about how if a gazelle, for instance, is attacked on the savannah, that you can actually watch what happens if they get away, they stop and they have this shaking, where they're basically ridding their body of all that intensity, the way that the adrenaline, the way their heart sped up, right? All of that, they release it, but we don't release it. We hold on to it. And almost always we think it's because of something that we did, right? We start telling ourselves stories about who we are. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's fascinating stuff, right? It's fascinating.
It's fascinating. And it goes, we've talked about this before, but these inner stressors that we subconsciously carry with us, it doesn't just always exhibit in personality changes or more susceptible to depression. People get heart attacks, ulcers, yeah. Irritable stomach problems, headaches, yeah. All kinds of different things. Yes, absolutely. I think this is where it's just that's
they're learning just, that more and more. It's really interesting. Sacred medicine, holistic medicine, like really understanding how these stressors create illness, but mm-hmm. also how our awareness of those stressors through mindfulness can change behavior, which can change outcome.
Mm-hmm. So true.
Yeah.
And this falls right into the next quote that I love from the story. So the heroine, Anna, draws strength and life lessons from her foster dad, Hap, even after he's gone. And she recalls some words that he said to her when she was just 10 years old. She didn't trust him, and he didn't really trust her yet. And she says to Hap, for as long as I can remember, people have been telling me that I should trust them. The social workers, the teachers, the strangers, all of them saying a version of the same thing, that I should let my guard down and open up. But the world has been showing me just the opposite. So what's the secret, Hap? And he says, there is no secret. Just keep your eyes open. Open all the time, but especially when you think you can't be surprised. That's when you learn to pay attention. You learn to listen to your own voice. Mm-hmm. And I loved that. Mm-hmm. So that was a little word of teaching and encouragement to a child, but also as a reader, I thought to all of us as adults.
Yeah. Definitely, definitely. Thank you. You guys are really careful, smart, intuitive readers. So I just want to thank you for that. It's a real pleasure talking to such intelligent readers. Yeah, that moment is really important for Anna. You know, she's been through a lot. She survived a lot. And here is somebody who isn't just giving her, you know, lip service. He's basically saying, yeah, the world is rough. And why should you trust me? Right? He's being honest with her from the very beginning. And he's giving her just like a little nugget that's going to follow her throughout the book, right? About keeping your eyes open, but also listening to your own voice, because what he's trying to give her, and hopefully it's what we all try to give our children, right? Is the kind of competence and confidence in their own experience so that they can trust the voice inside them instead of shut it down, right? So he's teaching her all this stuff, not so that he can be exalted in her eyes, so that one day when he's no longer there, she can turn back inward and know that she can be led to the place that she needs to go, right? Because it's with her. His voice is with her forever, but also she's grown in such a way. He's given her the tools to trust herself, which is, I think, just the greatest gift of all. Right? That we can actually trust ourselves. Mm-hmm. You know, maybe we never trust others completely, right? But we can trust ourselves over time. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Definitely.
Well, I love that he brought out that example of some of the best of humanity. And there were a lot of characters in the novel to me that just represented these beautiful parts of, you know, our human experience that we don't always see. And that was one of the nice counterbalancing things in the novel, because you are dealing most of the time with heavy subject matter, but it was balanced by these beautiful characteristics.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And beautiful relationships. Like, I really wanted to give Anna these anchors, these emotional anchors, and her foster parents. And there's a character later in the book who is a psychic medium, who is another favorite character for me, having written her. And really, you know, she isn't the kind of character who will come in to the scene and give Anna all the information, because I know that detectives do sometimes use mediums in order to, for instance, you know, maybe crack a case, a cold case or something that's been really difficult, missing persons case, for instance. But what I wanted this character, her name's Tally, to be is more like a mirror for Anna, and kind of much more like a sister or a wise aunt who will turn her back on herself and remind her that she does have that inner knowing, right, that Hap was teaching her, and that she is utterly prepared for the challenges of her life.
Yeah. In fact, I want to pick up on that a bit, because I really enjoyed the role of mystery and intuition. Mm-hmm. And to me, that was very much represented by the natural world, which was almost a character in this novel. And, you know, I'm an environmental attorney, so to me, this really spoke to me, because out in the natural world, that, for example, is where I process information and I think very clearly. And I think about creation and I think about some of the fundamentals, and it's very grounding for me, no pun intended. but in your novel, there was a role for that mystery and that intuition, and it was really counterbalanced against detective work and facts and forensics. Mm-hmm. And I thought that was really interesting, because you mentioned that sometimes law enforcement does rely on intuition and some of these other things we can't quite put a finger on. Yeah. Did you hear that from some of your research and your interviews?
Yeah, and it's just something I've always been really drawn to, I think, the role of mystery in the world. So I created Hap as he's a forest ranger, right? He's a forest ranger with a deep knowledge of the natural world. And he gives that to Anna as a resource, as a tool, so that later when she really needs to find herself and to have enough quiet to listen to that voice inside, you know, the natural world is real. I mean, right? We have those days where the chatter in our head gets really, really loud and we're replaying conversations or we're feeling whatever, like we're drowning, and you step outside and the wind is blowing, and even if it's not a beautiful day, we're reminded like, oh, right, this is the world. This is the actual world, not the world in my head. And I don't know, you don't have to hug a tree in order to feel better by stepping into nature. There's almost nothing, I think, for me that a walk can't cure. Sometimes I feel that way. And the role of spirituality in the book. So yeah, I made Hap a forest ranger, and I made Eden, Anna's foster mother, a kind of modern day mystic.
Yeah.
It really teaches her, that there are things beyond our knowing, things we can't possibly understand that we have to feel our way toward. And then she uses that tool as well in her detective work. So she really has been given some profound resources from the past. Yeah.
I love that.
Yeah.
I once had an attorney tell me years ago, one of my mentors, he said, you've got good instincts and don't lose that in practice. Mm-hmm. And this was literally like 30 years ago.
Yeah.
And that is something that has served me well throughout my practice, where certainly we're looking at evidence and we're looking at facts, but there's a certain part that is intuitive where we have to step back, just like your characters did, reevaluate, and especially reevaluate in an environment that is peaceful.
I love that you had that part of yourself, that gift, validated. Mm-hmm. I mean, how wonderful, right? Because then in that moment, that person became a mentor for you, whether he was a moment before or not, right?
Yes, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Right.
It stayed with me my whole career.
Obviously, no, that's a great story. And think about how powerful that is, right? We give that to each other by reflecting our lives back to each other. That's how... You know, there's that, you know, quote that you mentioned earlier about how we get through the difficulties of the world as we do it together.
Absolutely. And I am a big believer, too, that this sixth sense, some people call it women's intuition.
Yeah.
It guides us a lot through life. Who to be friends with, who to not be friends with, a new job to take, a neighborhood to live in. It can encompass almost everything. I've got a strange feeling about this. This doesn't feel right. And sometimes someone may say, oh, it's your imagination. Oh, you're being oversensitive. And then we need to step back and say, you know what? No, I don't think I am. Something just doesn't feel right here. And I'm going to go with that. That's my gut instinct. Mm-hmm. It goes by so many different words.
Absolutely. But it takes courage, what you're describing. It takes real courage then to listen to yourself and to trust that inner knowing. And to shut off the other voices outside of you that are challenging that, you know, and the more you stand up for yourself, because that's what you're talking about, right? You're standing up for your own sense of the truth. And once you do that, then you build that trust with yourself that you can rely on those voices to kind of keep you on the right path. Mm-hmm. Right.
On your own path. And it doesn't have to be anyone else's, but it's your unique path.
Amen. Yeah. Well,
thank
said.
You. Thank you. Well, we're going to say thank you to you for taking the hardships that you've overcome and showing us how to overcome those through your life, but also through your writing. And Kristen and I have spoken on this on the show before, but we're very big believers that when someone is hurting, we can all say, I'm sorry, I understand, I want to help. But unless you have suffered through the same thing, it's hard to be able to help someone. I guess the gift in having been wounded is that you do know what happened and you do understand.
Yeah.
And you are the one who has the absolute right to come in and say, yeah, I know what you're going through, and I do know how to overcome this. And you're doing that. Your stories, yes, it's a beautiful novel, and we thoroughly enjoyed reading it, but it was so much more for our readers. It strengthened the reader through all these little quotes and wisdom and the path of the heroine. And so we thank you so much for this beautiful book.
You guys are awesome. No, really, you've been such a great part of my day. I really... I really appreciate all your
insight. We feel that way too.
We've been so looking forward to it.
It's really a great conversation. Grateful. Thank you.
Thank you so much. So I'm going to close by telling our readers, you're going to want to connect with Paula McLean, and you can find her on Facebook and Instagram, and you can even sign up for her newsletter so you see everything that she's up to. And in that regard, what is on your radar? Can you give us any little hint to what you may be working on?
I'm working really hard right now on a new novel that I'm super excited about. Yeah, I'm always happiest when I'm writing, and I've sort of reached just past the 100-page mark, which is always a place that's important to me. It starts to feel real after that. So hopefully next year, sometime next year, I'll have a new book. Fingers crossed.
Fingers crossed. We're going to be on the lookout for it.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Paula. Have a pleasure meeting you.
You've been awesome. Appreciate
you. You too. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Have a wonderful day.
Bye.
Look forward to that next book.
Thank you.
Bye. We can do what we do thanks to authors like Paula. And without her, we'd be nowhere. But I just thought that she was so wonderful. And what was your takeaway? I have so many. I don't know where to start.
Honestly, on so many levels, this book spoke to me. First of all, a couple things. One is, you know, there was a line about walking down the street, and the protagonist basically was thinking about the stories of the young women she was seeing. What had they experienced? What were they going through? And that's something I think about all the time. You know, you and I actually have had conversations like this where we're out at a coffee place and we are curious about our fellow humans, not just out of a morbid curiosity, like, oh, I wonder what that person's doing, but more, what has made them up? What has shaped them? What are they overcoming? Those stories speak to me. And this book really kind of brought that home, because the story of both the victim, the story of the aggressor, the predator, these are significant things that we need to understand better. We need to understand the brain better. We need to understand human emotions better. And we're still piecing all of this together. Mm-hmm. That's big part of my takeaway from this book.
I love that. I feel the exact same way. There was something else. There was another quote, and I wanted to bring it up, but we had so many other questions. So in her book, Anna is trying to solve the crime about who the murderer is of this young girl. And Will, the investigator, is asking her, you know, what does she think? And she says, even the most twisted minds want love and connection. Will says, are you assuming the murderer has been wounded? And she says, yes, because that's what makes a predator. And I just thought that was incredible. So here we've got the juxtaposition of two wounded children. One comes out in total empath, heartfelt, trying to save the world. The other comes out angry, predator, murderer. And that just sort of blew my mind. Just the difference. And I don't have the answers to why one is one way and one is the other. We talked about it a little, about trying to help children when we see them going through these obstacles. But it's an interesting phenomenon.
Oh, my gosh. What you just raised to me is so important, because, you know, we study a lot about what makes a serial killer and looking, as you mentioned, at the criminal mind. Are we also looking at what is the difference for the people who go in that other direction? Like you were talking about, a person who wants to invest in others. What turned them in that direction? You know, now some people may point to faith. Some people may point to the intervention of a mentor. Some people may point to maybe that was their personality or their makeup. We need to know more about this.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Very much so. Yeah, this book, I hugely recommend this book for anyone who wants a great mystery, but also wants some deeper characters and a little more meaning and some substance in a novel. I love all of Paula's books. This will always be one of my favorite. Anything else on your takeaway that you want to go with, Kristen?
I brought up the question with her about intuition, and I kind of wanted to throw that out there a little bit, because, you know, you and I have a business background. We are focused on facts. And I was just wondering, for you, over time, have you found that your intuition has been important in, for example, some of your business endeavors?
Yeah, I would say, well, like I said to Paula before, I don't want to say women's intuition because everybody has intuition, but we all have a sixth sense. We all have certain moments where something just doesn't feel right. And sometimes we look back at it, hindsight, as a red flag. And we say to ourselves, oh, I should have listened to that. Oh, I should never have taken that job. Oh, I knew I shouldn't have gone to this location or whatever it might be. We all make mistakes, but we learn from them. It's the child, I guess, who maybe isn't mature enough to have those instincts yet. And they don't have the depth and wealth of experience to have gleaned this from there. But yeah, I think that we all do it. That's my takeaway too. I think that's huge.
Yeah.
Absolutely huge.
Well, let me tell you how many times I wish I had listened to my intuition. You would think we'd learn this by now. But, you know, like you said, I can look back with hindsight and say, well, there was a red flag and there was a red flag. And think about why we ignore those. We want things to be a certain way. We wish they would be a certain way. And sometimes that wishful thinking reflects something even deeper in us.
Mm-hmm. That's wisdom right there. Yes, I can think of so many situations, not even in myself, but with close friends and family, where they ignored things because they just wanted it to be perfect and they didn't want to believe. And I'm even talking about business endeavors here, or marriages, or relationships, or friendships. We encounter this all the time. And yeah, it's just such a great book.
Well, what's on your radar?
That's it. Just everything you said, and I don't have anything else. I think we've gotten it all, but that's a lot to be thinking about, I think. And thanks to Paula for this. And Kristen and I want to say, we've talked a lot about abused children here. And if you have anyone in your family or someone in your neighborhood or someone that you're suspecting, please call the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children. It's 1-800-THE-LOST. Or maybe we can do something as simple as become a big brother or big sister, mentor a niece, a nephew, a family friend, or a child. There are things that one person can do. We are big believers in that. And in closing, I just want to give a shout out to our unbelievable, get over here, Mark Carey, and say hello, our producer and sound engineer. We're also calling him producer now because he pretty much runs the show here, and we're super grateful for this guy. Say hi, Mark.
Hello, everybody. Hope you enjoyed today's podcast. It was a great one.
Sure was. Thanks to you, Mark Carey. And we're going to leave you with a few storm predictions to pique your interest, or maybe you'd like to read ahead. We have Teresa Ann Fowler with her book, It All Comes Down to This, Francine Rivers and The Lady's Mine, Charmaine Wilkerson and Black Cake, Sarah McCoy and Mustique Island, and Ellen Marie Wiseman and the Lost Girls of Willowbrook. And in the meantime, stay on the radar with Kristen and me. Check out our webpage at bookstormpodcast.com, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and YouTube.
Until next time, listeners, one of the best ways to brave the storm is to dive down deep into life-changing fiction.